While in preaching school in the late 70s, Carrie and I had the privilege of every Sunday evening after services going to the home of Larry and Marlene Burton. And we would teach them the gospel. Some people in Colorado who knew them down in California asked us to contact them. And they were so delighted when we came into their home and we started teaching the truth to them. And in time, she was persuaded to become a Christian, although Larry was not, because when it finally came to that point where we needed to, you know, it was that decision time, he said, well, this is all true and this is all good if there's a God. And we thought, well, why didn't you tell us that you thought that way in the very beginning after, I think, a couple of months of this? So we went back to the beginning steps and presented to him why evidence why we believe that there is a God. And nothing ever came of it. We didn't see them obey the gospel, and we just thought, well, maybe we failed here. We didn't know. And Marlene wanted to obey the gospel with her husband, but when she was in Colorado later that same year, I believe it was, she grew tired of waiting, and so she finally obeyed the gospel. And when he saw what she did, he said, hey, what have I been waiting for? And he went and did it, I believe it was the next day, by following his example. I was kind of the same way. I was persuaded of the truth about Jesus Christ long before I ever really let anyone know about it, or certainly before I obeyed the gospel. And I had also been in Colorado, in Longmont, Colorado, and I had been hearing the preacher there, Brother Paul Rogers, preach for a long time. And he was touching my heart without realizing it. I never told him. In fact, I never told him until probably 10 or 20 years later what he had done to me. But I was changing. My heart was changing over a course of several months. And later, one of the elders and his wife saw this in me, and he invited Carrie and I at that time into his home, and we weren't yet married, but we were just dating each other. And after dinner, he started showing me what was then called the Jewel Miller film strips. It's now in video, and I believe we even have a copy of all five videos in our library. And after about the second or third showing, I was ready. But I don't know if I was frightened, or if I just didn't know what to say, or what was going on. But it was finally on the fourth video, which I think is very good, that whole series is so good on showing people what the whole message of the Bible is about and how it all connects together. Man, I was ready. And I think Brother Earl Harrington, could see this. And so he started asking me some questions about what I believed and how I was doing on my spiritual journey. And he finally could see where I was at, and he just said to me, well, are you ready to do something about it? And I said yes. And I was literally shaking. I was just trembling so much. And then he left the room, unknown to me, to make a phone call. He called a member of the church, who in turn called another one, and another one, and another one, because they'd all been watching me attend the church there for many months that year. And finally, at about 10 o'clock on Tuesday that night, we got down to the church building, and we went into the room, and I got changed, and he put on the waiters. And when I came out, I was astonished by how many people were sitting in the pews waiting to see me immersed into Christ. I believe that there are a lot of people like both Larry and myself who are almost persuaded, but something is needed, and it's going to be different with every person, just to bring them over the edge. And there was a man in the Bible who was just like this. We don't know if he ever obeyed the gospel or not, but I want us to take a look at his story in Acts chapter 26, because there are some interesting things that happen here. And before I read from that, I'd like you to consider this illustration. Becoming a Christian is the most expensive thing you will ever do. The price we pay is our own lives, giving both our bodies and our souls to be saved. Therefore, the cost of doing such must be counted. For example, how many of us make a snap decision to purchase a house. Well, generally speaking, everyone that I know of, I'm sure there are some exceptions, but everyone that I know of, they give a lot of thought to it because they realize that they're going to be surrendering a large amount of cash. I mean, I figured out, if you were to buy a home at $100,000, and I realize that this illustration needs to be updated a little bit, but if you were to buy a home for $100,000 at 7% interest for 30 years, you're going to eventually turn over $239,000. And, you know, if someone doesn't give any thought to that, I almost wonder if they realize what they're doing. But again, you know that most of us give a lot of thought to that. And yet buying a house is nothing. It is nothing compared to becoming a Christian. Buying a house requires money, true, maybe some sweat and that sort of thing. But becoming a disciple of Christ requires your life. And I think I knew that before I was finally ready to submit myself to the Lord. And so I was hesitant. And I would say that I understand anyone's hesitation in that regard. But I would also like to say, once you know the truth, see your need, and are desperate for salvation, act upon it, you will be glad. More than you can imagine, you will be glad that you did it. Now, Acts 26 has the story of a man that I spoke about a few moments ago. And here Paul is speaking before two politicians. One of them is listening with great interest, and the other thinks, this is the silliest story I've ever heard in my life. And that's because Paul was speaking about some miraculous things, especially the resurrection from the dead. In particular, that one man, whom we know as Jesus the Christ, was raised from the dead. So let's hear what happens next now. As Paul's been speaking about that, let's jump in the middle of the conversation in verse 24 and see what happens here. Now, as he thus made his defense, speaking about Paul, Festus said with a loud voice, "Paul, you are beside yourself. Much learning is driving you mad." Excuse me. But he said, "I am not mad, most noble Festus, but speak the words of truth and reason. For the king, before whom I also speak freely, knows these things. For I am convinced that none of these things escapes his attention, since this thing was not done in a corner." And then he turns to address himself to the king and says, "King Agrippa, do you believe the prophets? I know that you believe," without even waiting for an answer. Then Agrippa said to Paul, "You almost persuade me to become a Christian." And Paul said, "I would to God that not only you, but also all who hear me today might become both almost and altogether such as I am, except for these chains." Listen to the words of truth and reason. Paul was making a defense against an accusation of insurrection. He had been accused of starting an insurrection. But he's showing what his past life had been like, the vision that he had received of the resurrected Jesus, and the fact that Jesus had commanded Paul to preach. He says, "That's all that I'm doing." Now, go back to verse 19, and we'll see what led up to the things that we've just read. 19 through 23 goes like this. "Therefore, King Agrippa, I was not disobedient to the heavenly vision, but declared first to those in Damascus and in Jerusalem, and throughout all the region of Judea, and then to the Gentiles, that they should repent and turn to God, and do works befitting repentance. For these reasons, the Jews seized me in the temple and tried to kill me. Therefore, having obtained help from God, to this day I stand, witnessing both to small and great, saying no other things than those which the prophets and Moses said would come. That the Christ would suffer, that he would be the first to rise from the dead." And that's what got to Festus right there. and will proclaim light to the Jewish people and to the Gentiles. And then, you know, Festus just interrupts Paul and thinks these out of his mind, thinking that Paul just isn't with it, because he's talking about these heavenly visions. He's talking about a man being raised from the dead, and we all know that doesn't happen. So obviously, Paul is beside himself. He's insane. He's mentally ill. Paul countered that he was speaking the truth and that he was serious about it. And he's saying the truth is that Christ had to suffer and then be raised from the dead, and thus light or salvation be proclaimed to all the people, meaning the Jews, and then also to the rest of the nations, speaking about the Gentiles. And this was not put together by Paul. He didn't dream up this story. He's referring to the prophets. They've been speaking about these things for centuries, he says. And this is why Paul then asked King Agrippa, "Do you believe the prophets?" Evidently, knowing King Agrippa somewhat, or knowing his background, he knew that he was a man who read what we now call the Old Testament Scriptures, and then he was familiar with them, and he must have made a habit of reading them, because Paul knew that he believed them to be the truth. And truly, if a person does believe what is written in the Old Testament, he will be led to believe the things about Jesus Christ, because the Old Testament Scriptures prophesied of him. The things that happened during the days of King Agrippa were things that had been talked about for a long time. And Paul knows that King Agrippa knows that to be the truth. The beauty of this truth was then given by Paul. He explained that after Jesus commanded the apostle to preach to the Gentiles, hear what he was supposed to do. Now look at verse 18. I know I'm kind of going backwards through the text, but after receiving this vision from Jesus, Jesus then tells, here's what you're supposed to do, Paul, verse 18. When you preach, you're going to open their eyes to turn them from darkness to light and from the power of Satan to God, that they may receive forgiveness of sins and an inheritance among those who are sanctified by faith in me. People who are almost persuaded by the gospel, like Agrippa was here, I think they can see the five things that Jesus mentioned to Paul that is stated there in verse 18. They can see their eyes, number one, being open. They can see, secondly, that they're turning from darkness to light. And that they are now turning from the power of Satan to the power of God. They realize, this is where I can receive the forgiveness of my sins. This guilt that I've been carrying around for all these years. I have found the source to relieve me from that. And number five, that this is now where I can receive this incomparable inheritance. I know there's got to be something better than this life, and I think I have found it. And people can see, as Jesus said they would see there in verse 18, that this all happens by faith in Jesus. Well, no wonder millions of people since that time have been interested in the things that you've been interested in. Now, going back to verse 26. It is crucial for us to listen to the truth because it is available to us now. Even as it was so available to King Agrippa back then. As Paul said, Jesus and his ministry were not done in a corner. Everyone in Palestine knew about Jesus and his ministry of wonderful, miraculous works and powerful words. And quickly everyone in the Roman Empire knew of Jesus. You cannot study world history, especially European history, without knowing what happened during the early days of the Roman Empire, and then how European history is rich with Christianity. And now America has come onto the world stage, and it is rich in its influence of Christianity. Anyone who attempts, therefore, to teach history without the impact of the churches or religion must have something against religion, or just doesn't want to see how Christianity has had an impact on our world. But the point that I'm making here is that Christianity's not been done in a corner. It's spread all over the globe. You know about it. You've heard about it. The truth is readily available to us, even as it was to King Agrippa. But the question is, as Paul asked this man in verse 27, do you believe? Now, just because someone hears these things and studies about them in history doesn't necessarily mean that he believes them. Now, a person might believe in the sense that, okay, yes, I think they happened, but they don't have any relevance for me. They can't do anything for me now. So I'm asking, do you believe in the sense that it is relevant to you? That its message has never died and is just as powerful now as it was for King Agrippa or Paul when he first heard it? Do you believe the prophets? Well, I think I can say, I know that you do believe. That's why, one of the reasons why you're here today. You've got at least the foundations of belief. Maybe it has some more growing to do or more building upon or something, but you've got at least the fundamental steps of belief nailed down in your heart. Please keep thinking about Jesus Christ and yourself. And as you read about Him or hear about Him, ask yourself, is He the Lord? Or is He a liar? Or is He a lunatic? You have to look at those things. Well, a lunatic doesn't operate the way He did. Clearly, Jesus in His ministry was of sound mind. He loved people. Now, sometimes we might think that someone to love their enemies and forgive the way He did has got to be out of his mind. But if you really look at the Scriptures, the Gospel accounts, and see how He treated people, how He loved them, how He devoted Himself to the Father and so forth, you'll say, no, He wasn't out of His mind. He was in His right mind. Well, does that mean He was a liar then? If He's not the Lord, and He's not a lunatic, then He's got to be a liar. But Jesus was a good man. You cannot find anywhere where He tried to deceive people or hurt them or try and get something out of them. His motives were pure. Where did He lie? Everything He said was the truth. So, if you think about it, there's only one conclusion to make about Him. He has to be the Lord. He has to be the Lord. But the question is, are you ready to put your faith into action? Are you at that point where King Agrippa was? You're almost persuaded. Maybe you just need to hear something else or see something else. And if that's the case and we don't present it to you today, then please let us know what it is. We'd be delighted to sit down and either listen or talk to you or do whatever it is that we have to do. But again, look now at verse 28. Where Luke tells us what happened. Agrippa then finally just said to Paul, he couldn't contain himself anymore, and he says, you're so close, Paul, you almost persuaded me to become a Christian. And it was good that Agrippa had come that far. He's so much further than Festus, isn't he? I mean, Festus thinks Paul is out of his mind, but Agrippa knows Paul's right on track. I know what he's saying is the truth. I've heard about all these things about Jesus. It's been during my generation, I know. But, as far as Agrippa had come, he was still lost. He's doing well. He was doing well, and he, of course, shouldn't stop. But anyone who's at his point is doing well. Don't stop. Don't do it sooner than you're ready. But when you're ready, don't let anything stop you. Don't let anyone keep you from doing what you know in your heart you want to do. How strong is your urge for salvation? As Paul explained in verse 29, we Christians also want to see others become Christians. He says, you know, I don't only want you, Agrippa, to become like me. I want everyone, including old Festus there, and these Roman guards, and the Jews are present. Now, as I want all of you to be just like me, except I don't want you to have these chains on. I don't want you to suffer. But whether it takes a little bit of persuasion on my part, or a little bit more, or a whole lot more, I want to do it. Whatever we can do, or whatever I can do, he was saying, I will do it. This is what the church is all about. The church is all about bringing people to that point that Agrippa got to, and then doing something to bring them over the edge to finally where that person says, you know something? I've waited long enough. I've had enough excuses, and I know that every day that goes by, I'm one day closer to eternity. So I'm ready to do it. Are you a Christian? Well, sometimes this is a hard decision to make because maybe there's a family member who disapproves. I've known of that in many cases where if a person in the family obeys the gospel, they'll have to contend with their family who is steadfastly opposing it. Or maybe it means you'll have to denounce some belief that you had in the past and you're just not willing to acknowledge that. Or maybe you're thinking, well, if I acknowledge that what I read in the Bible is true and I go along with it and obey it, then that means my family is lost. You know, that's a hard one to acknowledge, isn't it? When I was preaching in Long Beach, California, a friend of mine, his name was Bruce Wolf, and I, we would go out and evangelize. And there was one woman who had been attending, I think, if I remember right, she was the daughter-in-law of one of our members. And Rose was her name. She was eager for the gospel. And so Bruce and I went and taught her, but she, at one point she finally says, if I do this, I'm implying that my family is lost. So finally I said to her, Rose, let's just get you saved and worry about your family later. And she said, okay. So that night, we immersed her into Christ. And shortly thereafter, her family, knowing that she had been interested in us, got really curious. And one after another, they started obeying the gospel. In fact, Carrie and I went into the homes, into the home of four of them. And when we knocked on the door, they opened the door. And I don't even know if they said hello. They said, where does the Bible say you have to be baptized to be saved? And they were already sitting at the table, had their Bibles out. And so we said, well, let's go sit down. And we showed them what the scripture said. And that night, all four of them were baptized into Christ. So then, here's what you must do to become a Christian. Number one, you must believe that Jesus Christ is Lord, which you probably already believe, as is obvious from your presence here today. Secondly, you'll then have to verbalize what it is that you believe. See, if the belief is strong enough, we'll be willing to say, I believe Jesus Christ is the Son of God. And if that's something that you want to do today, in a little bit when we sing the invitation, you know, you can come forward, and to make it as easy on you as possible, what we'll do is you and I will come up here and you won't have to look at everybody, you can just look at me and say, I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. But we all need to hear you say that, because that is so very important. And then thirdly, you must understand that repentance is absolutely necessary. And again, you're probably already down those lines, evidenced by the fact that you're here. You're seeing that you're trying to change your life. You see some things that you've been doing that haven't been right. You see some things that you know you need to be doing because they are right. But if you're already at those three points, and you say, okay, I've done those things, what do I need to do now? Now you need to be baptized into Christ. And we believe this is so important, that when this building was constructed, a baptistry was made right back here. We have clothes for you to change into. I have waders to wear so I won't get soaking wet. And we're all ready. We just need your decision. I want to read a song to you, which actually we're going to be singing in just a few moments. And listen to the words of this song. Almost persuaded now to believe. Almost persuaded Christ to receive. Seems now some soul to say, go, Spirit, go thy way. Some more convenient day on thee I'll call. Almost persuaded, come today. Almost persuaded, turn not away. Jesus invites you here. Angels are lingering near. Prayers rise from hearts so dear. O wanderer, come. Almost persuaded, harvest is past. Almost persuaded, doom comes at last. Almost cannot avail. Almost is but to fail. Sad, sad, that bitter well. Almost, but lost. And for the last thing this morning, I want to read to you one of the last verses of the Bible. It is so interesting that God closes the Bible with an invitation to people to come to Him. Here's what He says in Revelation 22, verse 17. And the Spirit and the bride is the church, we say, along with the Spirit of God, the church also says, come. And let him who hears say, come. And let him who thirsts come. Whoever desires, let him take the water of life freely. Come now as we stand and sing.